I am going to interview Daryl Neighbors, who was chairman of the Long Beach Chamber of Commerce Subsidence Committee. Tape 1, Side A. Mr. Neighbors, if you'd like to just briefly say where you grew up and what your background in education is.
Well, I was born in 1905 in the little town of Mountain Grove, Missouri, which was about 2,000 people, almost all of whom had migrated there from Virginia after the Civil War. I never saw a Republican until I was about 15 years old. Anyway, at the end of the 7th grade, we moved to Memphis, Tennessee, where I finished grammar school and graduated from Central High School in Memphis, and had 2 years of college at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. And my mother and father wanted to go to Florida. The land boom was still on down there. And I dropped out of school and went along. We lived in Orlando for a year, just in time to see the boom crash. When that was over, we came to California.
What year was that you went to Florida?
1925. We came to Long Beach in 1926. And I lived in Anaheim while I worked for an automobile dealer. I wanted to finish college. Finally got a job which enabled me to go to UCLA, which was then on Vermont Avenue, the old campus. And I did graduate there in 1929.
What was your field of study at UCLA?
Economics. Tennessee, I had started pre-legal. I always wanted to be a lawyer. And that was the year of the 1923-4, was the year of the Scopes trial, Bryant, and who was the famous attorney from Chicago? Bryant killed himself trying to prove that evolution was sinful. At any rate, they made it illegal in Tennessee to use anything having to do with evolution in teaching in any of the schools. And all the good law professors at the university left and went to other states. They said you cannot teach law without discussing it on an evolutionary basis because it evolved from Rome to England to America. They left. Estes Kiefhofer was a student. He was a senior in my freshman year. I lived in the same fraternity house with him. Well, he stayed to finish, but he said, well, if I were you, I would change my major or go to another school. And I did change my major to business and finance. After I came out there and graduated from UCLA, I still had that hankering to be a lawyer, and I struggling to make a living in real estate, went to start a school at night, 5 nights a week, in the old Southwestern School of Law in the Ocean Center building. I went there 2.5 years till the earthquake hit, and by then I was working for the Security Bank. And I got involved in the Junior Chamber of Commerce, and one reason or another, I dropped the law after 2.5 years.
But you came to Long Beach then from UCLA.
Yeah, permanently. I'd lived here before, but then we moved up to Los Angeles and I went to UCLA. I lived up there 2 years when I went to UCLA.
So then you were working with the Security Bank, you said, after...
From January 15th, 1933, I started to work for them. And they were just creating a real estate department. They had to do, like all banks and insurance companies, because they were having to foreclose on so many properties because of the Depression. And then on March 10th, 1933, we were hit with the earthquake. I've been there 2 months. Properties just poured in. And the real estate department grew rapidly. Bank had no trouble. People just abandoned their properties and disappeared. Lots of them.
Because of the earthquake?
Yeah. Scared to death to come back. They'd leave their properties off the foundation and badly damaged. My first job. Somebody would phone in the bank and say, we think you have a loan on a house next door. It's been off the foundation since the earthquake. Nobody's been there. We don't know where the people went. But they'll come take a look. My job was to go inspect buildings. The first 2 weeks after the quake, I cut the thick pair of leather shoes to pieces walking on broken glass. And
then how long were you with Security Bank?
I stayed with them until 1942. I was manager of their office building at First and Pine, and their real estate in Long Beach, Wilmington.
And then in 1942?
Yeah. I was in the Navy. Started trying. A week after Pearl Harbor, I went up and they said I was too old. 6 months later, they created a new class of officer called Aviation Volunteer Specialist.
Aviation
Volunteer Special, AVS. And they were looking for old boys like me to handle paperwork on air stations and carriers because pilots hated paperwork. And I loved aviation. I'd helped get the airport started here. So they took me into that classification. I was always on air stations during the war.
Where were you then?
Well, they sent me to Quonset Point, Rhode Island for training, and then back to Naval Air Station San Diego for some more training, then to Sitka, Alaska for a year to the air station there, which was amphibious. They had no landing strip. And from there out to Attu for 6 months. And then back to Naval Air Station San Diego for the last year of the war.
So you were never stationed in Long Beach?
No. I love San Diego, the North Island. That air station is very interesting.
Well, then how long were you in the Navy?
A little over 3 years.
So you went in 42, you said?
42.
And you were out in 40.
My official document says I was released December 25th, 1945. A nice quick one. I had mixed emotions. I loved the Navy. I was too old, I thought, to stay and compete with the young guys.
Then you came back to Long Beach?
Mm-hmm.
That time.
Went to work for the bank again. They promoted me up to head office in Los Angeles. I commuted on the old red cars.
Then,
But I hated I didn't like Los Angeles downtown and the atmosphere. And then Harry Button, you put it in.
Yes.
Larry Collins asked me to have dinner with him. And before the war, I'd been very active in community chest and chamber of commerce and junior chamber. The executive of the community chest, who'd been with him, I think, 15 years, named Howard King. I'd been trying to quit. The war was over, and he said, now I'm going. So they were asking me to take his job as executive secretary of the community chest.
Of the community chest.
Of the ancestor of United Way. And, well, I did. I hadn't been there but a year when...
What year was this that you...
1946.
So you were just with Security Bank then in Los Angeles, just the 1 year?
Really, only not a full year. I started with them January 1st, 1946, and I worked in June or July 46, before work under Howard King, who finished out 1946, and then left me on my own for the whole year of 47 to run the campaign on the whole world.
At this, working in toward our problem with the, our real problem of the subsiding syndrome, we're getting to it, though.
The books we were just getting ready to start, the two Bixby companies, Jotham Bixby Company and Bixby Knowles, and Bixby Land Company out around the traffic circle, we were just getting ready to start a building program. And I'd had some experience with that, with the bank. So, on January 15th, 1948, I started to work for them.
Now, who did you work for?
I worked for the Jotham Bixby Company, which was Bixby Knowles in Los Angeles. Just starting the shopping center at San Antonio on the Friday. And then on, I saw every mail in there. Brushed full of paint. Oh, yeah. I loved it. And a year or so later, the Bixby Land Company started its shopping center at Seminole and Los Carlos. And I got involved in that. And I got involved with Alameda's Land Company, an old company.
And was that a Bixby company?
Predominantly Bixby. You know. It's built a small shopping center at Spring and Palo Verde. Mm-hmm. That's the Emiliani Bixby Company, which was at warehouses in Los Angeles, which we sold. I don't know how much of this you want to know.
At what point?
At any rate, about 19, I was just looking here, in 1954, I was back on the Chamber of Commerce board, an executive committee. Well, I have been for... since about 1950. I've been on it before the war. I came back on about 1950 after the war. And I began to hear about this land sinking problem. And the commanding officer of the naval base in Minor Heining, H-E-I-N-E, delightful guy, now gone, caught me after one board meeting and told me what was happening and afraid we were going to lose the Navy. Didn't know what to do about it. There was great disagreement as to what was going on and what caused it. And anyway, this is outlined in this 1959, Craig Hosner, a long-standing congressman, you remember?
Right, yes.
Was recommending me for Lane Bryant Annual Award, whatever that is. And he outlined how I got started in this thing. And I got the chamber to create a small committee, five men. Hap Appledon, who owned the Advance Trucking Company, do you know him down on the peninsula?
Yes, I do.
Dave Root, who was the manager of Guy F. Atkinson Company, now gone. Hap's still alive, I guess. Not well. Who were the other two? Well, it's in here someplace. I remember that. I mean, we first thing we got concerned with, I told you about, was the efforts to start developing oil wells. Before the war, in 1937 or 8, I was managing the security unit. An oil company called General Petroleum, now gone, merged into something else, came in to lease an office in the security building. And they were pretty slow about telling me who they were. And then I learned they didn't want anybody to know. And they wanted a room kind of in the back where they wouldn't be seen. But their credit was certainly good, and they didn't know anything illegal they were doing. And they moved in over a weekend and set up a lot of drafting boards. They were there about 6 weeks, and that was the crew which Carl was doing the studies which led to the discovery of oil west of the Ford plant over in Wilmington. General Petroleum made that discovery. And that's why this oil field was sparked in Wilmington and run through the field bridge. It's called the Wilmington Oil Field.
I see. Now this was...
Well, I had that earlier. That was 1937 or 8. I didn't know it had anything to do with subsidence until later. That was where subsidence really started. So it was not the 1941 or 2, well, other than that, the city finally decided to start building for a while because Union Pacific was joining the city over there, the Edison Company, they were drilling and draining oil out from under the harbor district. Well, the city, I think, was forced to start extracting this new form of wealth. Otherwise, the private companies would have got it all, essentially. The sinking began gradually, a few inches a year. Then Kerr McGee Oil Company came along and wanted to drill east of Pine Avenue, out of the Harbor District.
Kerr, did you say?
Kerr, K-E-R-R. Kerr was a senator from Oklahoma, a very prominent, influential senator, United States Senator. McGee was his partner in oil business from Oklahoma. They bought a little paper here. I think it was the Signal Hill Tribune, I'm not sure. To propagandize the community, to have the city council give them a lease on everything east of Pine Avenue, which was the bare boundary of the Harbor District, and to allow them to drill for oil along the beaches in front of the Coast Club, which calls Hotel.
Yeah, that would have gone all the way from Pine East then to the Orange County?
Yeah, could have, yeah. We didn't connect that with subsidence at the time, but we did get darn, darn excited about having oil wells on our beaches because we knew what had happened in Huntington Beach. So one of the first resolutions I got involved in here was a resolution by the chamber urging the council to adopt an ordinance prohibiting oil wells within, I think we said, 2,500 feet of the center line of Ocean Boulevard, seaward of it. Eventually the ordinance did get passed, but I think the city cut it down to 1,500 feet. That's why that island downtown is so close. Anyway, we kept the oil wells off the beach, and then we got concerned about the land sinking. And in 1954, George Badenhausen was president of the chamber. We decided to create a large anti-subsidence committee with about 25 men. Harry Button, Hank Witter, the publisher of the Press Telegram. Larry Collins, the publisher of the Independent, which was a separate paper. Warren Dexter Jr. You find their names in the minutes here. We started meeting once a week, at least. Trying to find out what the hell was going on. I found out that, well, the city manager was saying different.
Job for the boss was
Did you ever hear of Crunchy Amar? He was the highway department manager. And his secretary was named Maddie. Both of them stopped speaking to me. Well, you know, indirectly what we were doing was saying that the Harbor Department certainly had the legal responsibility for taking care of this thing, and they hadn't done it. Therefore, there had to be a citizen committee, or practically a vigilante committee, to get going and do something about it. And they did not like it at all.
Were they not concerned about the subsidence?
Well, the chairman of the Harbor Commission in those days was named Foster Martin, Martin Decker, who made himself. He was a nice, generous guy. He'd become wealthy by inventing some kind of an oil tool that all these customers were oil people, and all these friends were oil people. And most of the oil companies had engineers who would prove to their satisfaction that oil had nothing to do with subsidence. The Harbor Department had some engineers like that, too. Well, Frosty was some justification. Heard that side of the story. He thought those guys downtown were hysterical, and the Navy they never did like anyway, because the Navy kind of encroached on the Harbor Department. So they resented it. And Frosty went around, well, along the way, I don't know, he went into the series of little earthquakes we had that sheared off oil wells. And he took this engineer, Jan Law, that I'd mentioned to him, on the service clubs. The town, there was really nothing to worry about. There was just surface slippages. And anyway, they were getting so much money out of this oil that it gets a little damaged. We rebuild your city and pave the streets with gold. I think this was a quotation. Yeah. Which he believed. So this talk we were promoting, the subsidence could be prevented, which we learned from Richfield Oil to begin with, and then some other engineers. I went right. Boy, I can't remember the year, but then this Mallon suit came along in which we lost title to all the money.
The year of the Mallon suit, I think.
Yeah. I gave you a copy of this suit. You've got it someplace. The Supreme Court of California. 5-4 decision said Long Beach was never owned. State of legislature can take it all away. So we could not rebuild the city and pay the streets with gold. That was a horrifying development. So then we were up against a real disaster.
Yes. What was involved? Would you like to go and just kind of briefly outline what the Mallon suit was involved with?
Yeah, well, at the preamble to it, the Harbor Department had accumulated over $100 million in cash. They've been spending money as fast as it reasonably could, rebuilding the harbor, new piers, new buildings, and repairing the subsidence damage at the entrance channel, now crossed by what they call the Dublin Bridge. The pier is on this side.
That's the
Rita
Channel?
No, the Rita Channel is along east and west, the entrance channel where the Spruce Goose was back all over there. The Long Beach Harbor Department pier is on this side, the west side of that channel, has subsided and gone underwater. And they had engineering reports that said, well, you've gone down 8 to 10 feet, and you'll go down another